everybody's got a body, and I know bodies. Living in this body is something that we've got to do every day, so we may as well master it. I'm your host, the Good Dr. Dave, and this is the Health Mastery Cafe, your number one brew spot to learn how to master your health.
Next on the Health Mastery Cafe.
Hey, it's Dr. Contessa, and you are watching the Health Mastery Cafe with Dr. Dave.
And today, I'm really excited because we're serving up a rich blend of celebrity health topics. And not just for the glitz, not for the glamour, but for the relatable human stories that they are. Remember, celebrities are people too, and they have bodies. I want you all to meet our guest host for today. Joining me in the cafe is Holland Reed. Now, you gotta know that she's multi-skilled, she's multi-talented. She is a photographer, she's my photographer. She's an actress, but she's also a host and a TV personality. That's where we met.
Yes.
We met on the sets of CNN and HLN, you know, when HLN was
so much
was
fun.
Thing. It was so much fun. And here
so
we are.
Fun. And here we are.
We get to do it
again.
Living
Thanks
your
for dream.
Being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no,
I appreciate it.
This I'm so amazing. Glad we get to do this because there, as we talked about, there are some celebrities who are willing to give of themselves more than is required for what they do.
Absolutely.
When celebrities tell us what's happening with them physically, we say, oh, you're a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have it, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And for people who don't have it, they, you know, become more aware of it.
Right.
I think that one of the really great things that a celebrity could do is use his or her influence to help people like this
mm-hmm.
with health. But there are some stories that we don't get the answers to.
Right.
I wanted
right.
to highlight a couple of those and really just sort of dig in a little bit and bring it back to people's attention so we can get some awareness, but also learn about it.
Absolutely.
One of those people, and I think one of the you know, the ones that's on people's minds now is Bronny James. The son, 19 years old.
The son of the king.
Son of LeBron
the son
and
of
Savannah
the king
James.
We're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And last year he apparently had cardiac arrest
yes.
on the court. Tell us what happened there.
So last August, during a practice at USC in Los Angeles, where he's a basketball player, well accomplished, doing amazing things, he collapses out of nowhere on the court. Cardiac arrest, the trainers had to come in. They had to, if I'm not mistaken, resuscitate him, defibrillator, rush him to the hospital. Thank God he's in the best of care. He does have that, I wouldn't say luxury, but the opportunity to be in the best hands.
Right.
In Los Angeles, but they said cardiac arrest at 21 years old.
Yeah.
Is he 20 years old?
No, he's 19.
I'm sorry, 19. I'm sorry, 19 years old. Is red flag central? We know kids and students across the country have unfortunately dropped to the end of their life on fields
right,
all
on
the time
field.
For different reasons.
Yeah.
But when they said cardiac arrest, you know, my ears start ringing as a
of
mother,
course.
First
right.
and foremost.
Right.
My son, he's 22 now, but when he played sports, he was diagnosed with a heart murmur very early on.
Yeah.
And they said, keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
If he's out of breath, of all these little signals that, hey, this might not be the thing he needs to be doing, dial back.
Right.
And eventually he's a game design major, so I'm very excited.
Right,
about
yeah,
that.
He's right,
he's
yeah.
talented.
And he's really good.
And he's alive, and we're good.
The fruit doesn't
but
fall
fruit
far
is,
from the tree.
He's a creative.
There you go.
But yeah. in that lifespan of when he was playing sports, my eyes, I had a different view. So, you know, of course. Savannah and LeBron were at his side immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think any parent, it's the scariest phone call you'll probably
yeah.
ever get.
Well, but then the publicist came out, and they said that they figured out what it was,
mm-hmm.
figured out what the condition was, that he's being treated for it, and he'll be back playing soon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a paraphrase, but that's exactly what they said. And as a cardiologist, I'm thinking to myself, what kind of condition causes cardiac arrest
right.
that you can treat to the point of cure and go back to playing basketball?
Right.
Not that many.
Right.
And so obviously there is at least one, and it just leaves an open question for us. So much so that I went back and was thinking, did he really have a cardiac arrest? One of the things that gets confused with heart stopping is when you faint. When you faint, your heart rate can slow down mm. so much that if you were to take the pulse, it can be so slow, you know, if there's 4 or 5 seconds in between the pulse, you'll think that the heart has stopped. The thing that doesn't fit with that is that the AED, when you put these automated external defibrillators on, right. It's designed to read the heart rhythm, and it won't shock a person unless they're appropriate. It won't shock people inappropriate.
Right.
So at least if he was indeed shocked,
right.
That's the thing. We don't know if he was shocked. They said they did CPR.
Right.
We don't know if he was shocked. If he was indeed shocked, then it was cardiac arrest. If he wasn't, you know, you've got that open question. And then that would make me feel better as a cardiologist to, but you have a son.
Yeah.
And just that feeling of the sheer dread, would you be willing to go through that again? That's the question.
So absolutely not. Ever.
The prospect that it would happen again.
I want to see my son get married, have children, do all the things. I don't care if he's an athlete or not an athlete.
Right.
So I my question always is, okay, and this is just me playing devil's advocate here. This is just, you know, the rumor mills. You go on different websites and people say they're not telling us the truth because they're protecting a brand. They're protecting the LeBron James brand.
Sure.
Put him back on that court at all costs. I'm not saying feed the beast, but we know in all industries, there's some type of sacrifice that happens within families that are these huge conglomerate hierarchy, so to speak.
Right.
And you're not going to let him not play.
Right.
I'm sorry, his name is slipping my mind. The young man from the Buffalo Bills.
DeMar Hamlin.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was like, it's right there on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
And I look at that, and it's like he was so open, transparent, and honest about what it took to get back. And that was over a year took him.
Yeah.
So for them to, it seemed like a really bit of a push. Like, oh, he's fine.
Right.
He had a cardiac arrest, but he's back on the court.
But that's why it brings me back to
this. It's very strange.
That's why it brings me back to, I'm not really sure that he arrested. Again, speculation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure that he had cardiac arrest, which would then make me feel just fine about him playing again. He's apparently in the portal, right? You know, is he, you know, trying to leave?
Yeah.
So he's playing, he's back. And that does bring that. But I think it's ridiculous to think that LeBron, Savannah, however much money that they have, that they would just kind of put him out there to...
No.
You know, ultimately play basketball with him on the court. And there's some takeaways because I think that no matter what happened, if there is cardiac arrest, the way to survive cardiac arrest is CPR.
Yes.
The way we do CPR right now is hands-only CPR. In the bottom of this description, I'm going to put a link. How do I do hands-only CPR? Do you know how to save a life? The truth of the matter is if you know how to do hands-only CPR, you can do it. The answer would be yes. I want you to learn how to do this. Number two, go get your kids screened. If they're gonna play athletics at the collegiate or the professional level, go get them screened. You go get them screened for heart disease, you go get them screened, have a real detailed heart screen. I have a video on my Instagram. What does that look like? What are the three tests that you should have? And then the third thing is, in every field of play, in high school sports, college sports, because it's not just college and professional sports that have cardiac arrest. There was a cheerleader in Texas who just had cardiac arrest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last year, you should have an AED. Do a fundraiser. Everybody get the money so that AED goes to every field of play where this is a possibility, and it is a possibility.
Absolutely.
It becomes less a possibility when we do those three things.
Yeah.
So I wanted to move on because the second one is Wendy Williams. Wendy Williams is, you know, we saw that in front of our eyes. We didn't see Bronny.
Yeah.
We saw Wendy Williams a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Tell us more about Wendy Williams.
Dave, I was watching the show that day.
Yeah.
And I remember.
You were actually watching it live.
Watching it live.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw her pause, and it was a deer in headlights. It was weird. What happened to the TV?
Right.
Because she just was like this, and I was like, it's something I thought, and I thought something happened in the audience that she was maybe witnessing, like, you know, or I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we see her shake, and then she collapses to the ground.
Right.
It was a scary moment just watching. I immediately was on Twitter. I'm trying to figure out, like, what just happened to Wendy Williams? It's trending. And we later find out now this was kind of like the coming to the head of a lot of her other issues that she had going on, addiction issues.
Yeah. She's been very public about
Very public, extreme weight loss, erratic behavior in business and also in her personal life.
Right.
And not, I mean, she didn't seem to come together and be gelled well in any way. Like there was nobody looking after her and protecting her.
And that wasn't the norm for women.
Not at all.
Right?
Not at all.
You know, being in the world that she was in, you know.
As salacious as she is.
Absolutely. She had it together.
It still was not, it was still abnormal to see her in this kind of like interesting, weird, I don't want to say decline state, but then now fast forward, here we are.
Now we know.
With this new reality show that is out, we're seeing in real time these issues happening. They're playing out with her family. They're playing out with her addiction issues, her asking for alcohol or what have you. And it's like, wow, you're watching it. And I mean, I hate to use the word train wreck because she doesn't, nobody deserves, you know, the diagnosis that she received. But now we know that this has been going on for years.
For a long time.
For years.
And that's what FTD does. We heard about FTD kind of in the lay world from Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Frontotemporal dementia. Mm-hmm. The parts of the brain that this disease, for which we don't know what causes it, strikes much younger people.
Yeah.
We're used to hearing of dementia in people who are aging. This is a young people's condition. It starts with the faculties of those two parts, right? Not being able to make good judgments, executive function, memory, right? So some of those things, speech is in the temporal lobe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, word finding difficulties, things like that. And, and that's what, when we look back, we're like, oh, that's what this was.
Yeah.
And she probably had a petit mal seizure and then a full seizure in front of us, or just the beginning of the seizure in front of us, as opposed to what I thought at the beginning, which was that she fainted.
Right, right.
And, you know, our thoughts and prayers obviously are
Absolutely.
With her because there is no cure for FTD at this time. So I wanted to move on to another one that really is just a lot of speculation about. We really don't have any information really at all. But there are some hints and clues.
Yeah.
It's Jamie Foxx.
Right.
Tell me what we know about Jamie Foxx. Give us that story.
So that this is one of those kind of whodunit, what actually happened.
Yeah.
It's like there's pieces of information, like you said, those context clues, but it still is not making sense, right? He was on set filming and he had, they said, an episode. He had a near-death episode. That is a very strange thing to even say in its first place. Like the near-death episode right back last April.
Yeah.
He disappeared for a while. Then his family members, I think his daughter came forward and said, you know, he's basically on life support and
it was a medical complication. Those words.
But that
medical complication.
You tell me.
Yeah.
Life support, medical complication.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, the life support notwithstanding, because you can have a medical complication that's mild.
Okay.
Or you can have a medical complication that can, you know, threaten your life. So that part is okay. And it, you know, I don't think they would lead us on about being in the ICU.
Right.
They certainly were in the ICU. The question is medical complication as to what caused it. So a lot of rumors out there.
Right.
Oh, you know, he was filming in Atlanta, here in Atlanta, filming a movie with Cameron Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there was a lot of kind of stuff, rumors and stuff swirling around the production, you know, and whether or not he had to take the shot, the jab,
right,
the COVID vaccine or a booster in order to be on set. That was one of the things that people said. Well, guess what? We don't even know if he had the vaccine, so we don't know what that is. But a medical complication coming out of the mouths of the family and the publicist make you think that there was either a procedure, a medicine, or something that he was going for, right? Not these things that are kind of swimming around in the media, like, oh, he got a hold of some bad drugs partying in Atlanta.
Which is what the speculation was for a while, that he, that, you know, that whole, that fentanyl kind of weed list.
Oh.
But the one thing that I do know only through people that I know, Jamie Foxx, he doesn't even drink. Like he's that from what
is that
I,
right?
Well, that, he told me this himself.
Oh, well, there
just
you go.
FYI, this is a man that doesn't even drink. And yeah. So, and that was out of his words in a conversation I had with him over 20 years ago.
Right.
But then also people that I know that know him have said the same thing. Like this was not,
right. This is not
like some partying drug right. overdose right. issue, personal issue. Yeah. This was like something very serious.
Some kind of medical complication.
And he right. also said, I will say this recently, they've also said he's going to come out and say it hasn't happened yet. But for him to be able to go up, it was, I think, an award show and say, I wasn't even able to walk 6 months ago.
That's right.
It leads me to the stroke aspect.
Yeah, so that was the other thing. Yeah, stroke, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so you start yeah. those context clues that you were talking right. about. And then him saying that he has been actively being treated for the last year
yeah.
in a brain injury stroke facility.
Right. One of the best rehab places in the country is mm-hmm. in Chicago. That's where he was. Mm-hmm. And they happen to specialize in, you know, stroke rehabilitation, but that's not the only thing they
right.
do. So we can't assume just because he was at, you know,
sure.
this place in Chicago that that's what he had. But it kind of makes sense. When you look at the video that surfaced, that he actually kind of holding, it was a selfie video. It was genuine. I yep. felt like everything that he was saying was coming from his heart, but he was measured. He was not, he was, you know, you can
Absolutely.
Kind of see his you know, eye movements, trying to select some of his words. And there could be any number of reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously had lost some weight, right?
Yes.
So if you're in an ICU intensive care unit, it doesn't matter for what it is. And you were there for 2 weeks, you will lose a lot of weight. So you can't say anything about that. There's a lot of swirling
right.
around. Oh, he looked like he had a stroke. You mm-hmm. can't, he doesn't have anything in his face because all we saw was his face
right.
about the stroke. So we still don't know that. Again, we're speculating, we're bringing it out. But I think some of the takeaways are this. Do I know what it feels like?
Mm.
What are the signs of a stroke? And so what I tell people is, if there is anything that stops your speech, you finding a word, you being able to express a word, and it's not just a quick thing, and mm-hmm. you still can't do it, whether you're with somebody or not, you're gonna get yourself to medical attention. If any part of your body, A, doesn't move well, not just your arm, if you can't move it, that's medical attention, whether it's a stroke or not. And I want you to be thinking about that cognitive part too. If you get disoriented and there's no explanation for it, you didn't just fall and hit your head, I want you to get yourself to medical attention.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the takeaways. You know, maybe we get to understand what happened to Jamie, but he's not obligated to tell us.
I question for you, and only because you gave the examples of if it's happening to you. So as a person who watched my father have a bunch of mini strokes, who had
yeah.
five major strokes,
yeah.
What is something that I can look at that I didn't notice? My dad is a jokester, so he makes
yeah.
funny faces.
Right, there you
right?
go. Yes.
And but when he was making this weird face, we were like, oh, he's just being sarcastic. He was not being sarcastic
yeah, he was
and drooping his face.
Right.
He was having an active
yeah.
stroke. So
right.
is there
yeah.
anything that
well,
you could
Well, so yeah, I mean, to your
share?
Point, right, and that's what I'm saying. That facial droop or facial, you know, change
yeah.
in somebody who's not just smiling.
Yeah.
And they're still doing it, right? I mean,
mm.
that's letting you know. Don't play around with it. There could be a number of reasons for it, but I don't want you to play like you're a medical professional.
Mm-hmm.
When we shrink down the symptoms, we miss things.
Right.
So when we tell people to only look out for chest pain, shortness of breath, nausea, vomiting, and sweating for heart attacks, we miss all the women who don't have any of those.
Right.
What you want to be thinking about is, can I explain what's happening to me?
Mm-hmm.
If I cannot explain what's happening to me, don't try to figure out what it is. You know what the first thing we do is?
Uh-huh.
We try to Google. In this particular case, if there's a stroke, time is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Getting yourself to medical care could actually save your neurologic function. But it doesn't have to just be neurologic. We don't know if it was a stroke for him. Anything that feels like, I just can't explain it. Why is this still happening?
Mm-hmm.
Go get medical attention. Let the professionals that you've hired take care of it for you.
Right.
That's the zoom out message for this.
Got it.
I really wanted to go to this
yeah.
last one, but before we do,
yes,
we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be back in the Health Mastery Cafe with my girl, Holland Reed.
Find the Health Mastery Cafe on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at the Health Mastery Cafe, and subscribe on YouTube also.
We are grinding up the beans on celebrity health, not just for the glitz and the glamour, but for real stories that we can use something
and better our health, master our health. I wanted to talk about one last story, Holly. I want to talk about Olivia Munn. Olivia Munn, 43 years old, 43. And this story just broke recently.
Yes.
About her having breast cancer, but the story was unusual.
Yeah.
Tell us about the story.
So the story starts out with her revealing that she has been battling aggressive breast cancer for a year, has had four surgeries. But the kicker was is that when she went in, she had a normal mammogram.
Yeah.
And then after that, she was able to get more tests done. And then finally, after a very specific assessment test, decided to advocate for her own health and found out she, in fact, did have a very aggressive form of breast cancer, which is very scary to a lot of women. You go to these routine checkups, you go to these mammograms. I myself have one coming up, and this story scared me really to pieces, because I'm thinking, you think you're going in, you're doing the right thing, you're following the protocol and the rules, but you're still subjected to this potential disease that is, you know, it's life-altering, life-changing, and and hopefully not fatal. Things, you know, have moved on, and technology and what have you.
And the thing that is going on in people's minds, because I'm getting questions about it, and I'm a cardiologist, right? And we're on the news about it when this came out, is the sheer fear of having done what you're supposed to do, get the mammogram, but still not getting the result. And if it weren't for her persistence, I don't think the result would have been the same. I want us to bring in an expert on the matter. We have brought in the studio, in the cafe, Dr. Erin Bowman. She is a breast surgical oncologist and the managing partner of Atlanta Breast Care right here. My friend, Dr. Erin Bowman, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Olivia Munn, tell us, how could this happen? How could you have a normal mammogram and still have cancer?
So, unfortunately, it happens every day.
Not every day.
Every day. So, especially in young women. So I will say this, most women don't have a family history of breast cancer. And so a lot of women don't do the extra steps to do early mammograms or see a specialist or talk about what is my risk and do I have a high risk, because they think, I don't have a family history.
We don't have a family history. It's not going to happen to me.
I don't need to, So I don't need to go do those extra mammograms. I don't need to talk to my doctor about breast cancer, because why? It's not in my family.
Right.
So for her, with her story, she does have a family history. She got genetic testing done, which was negative. She had a mammogram.
The genetic testing was negative.
That's what they reported, that her genetic testing was actually negative. She had mammograms, which were negative. Everything was benign. But it was when she had a conversation with her OBGYN who said, well, you had all these things done, and yes, they were all negative. You would think you're in the clear, but we, as scientists, as you know, medical professionals, we don't know everything. So let me run what we call a risk calculator and see actually what your percentage is and see if you qualify for something additional like an MRI for screening.
Yeah.
MRIs are really sensitive tests, and they can find things that we don't necessarily see in the mammograms, especially in our young women who have dense breast tissue.
Sure.
So that's what she did.
So really important point that the mammogram is not an end-all be-all.
It is not an end-all be-all, but it is still our screening recommendation for screening for breast cancer.
So screening. And I think you hit another important point. So the mammogram is still the first step. But advocating for yourself, having physicians that are being circumspective, looking at things a little bit outside the box, also matter. But when you talk about the sensitivity of an MRI, what she's saying is it just is much less likely that you would miss a small cancer. The density of breast tissue for a young woman, much denser, harder to see on a mammogram than an MRI. That's what you're saying.
That is what I'm saying. So how I describe it to when I talk to patients about dense tissue on a mammogram, particularly for young patients, is that the mammogram is an X-ray of the breast, right? So the breast, it shows up, the tissue shows up white on a black background. And when you're looking for something abnormal, which also shows up white, it's like looking for a snowman in a blizzard.
I can't see it. I just saw a demonstration of that with a sugar cube. They put it in coffee and then like what, and then they put it in milk and they were like, this is the problem. You can't see it. And that was the best visual representation of what you're saying.
So is mammogram the best test for young women?
Yes.
So you still catch some.
but you're going to miss some.
Yes. Well, so it for young women, there should be a discussion with your provider, healthcare team, because you could be at high risk or need additional testing. So maybe a 3D mammogram, maybe an ultrasound in addition to your mammogram,
yeah.
but also maybe an MRI.
An MRI.
But for MRI qualification, you have to have that calculation done because it's over 20% is considered high risk.
So she was over 20% as a rule to have had an MRI.
Right.
And that's how she found it.
Correct.
She then had a double mastectomy.
Yes.
Was the cancer on one side?
That's what they reported.
Okay.
Yes.
So cancer is on one side, but it's not unheard of to have a double mastectomy. Why do people do that? Why do women do that?
Some women do it. Well, a lot of women do it because they don't want to have to deal with it again. And not saying that that is a true statement, mm-hmm. but the mental and emotional impact that one diagnosis has going forward and having to go back and get your mammogram again and having to go back and get MRIs again and mm-hmm. even just a breast exam
yeah.
Yeah.
could be, you know.
Just going back through that,
like
right?
PTSD.
It's a PTSD. Well,
yeah. Angelina Jolie, when she did it, she said it was peace of mind.
Yes.
And that was literally, at the end of the day, her biggest goal. She said, I need to have peace of mind to be a mother to my children.
Yeah.
And I think that was bigger than the right. losing of this part of you.
Yeah, the
right?
physical part.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The part that I know for sure is not known widely is that if you do a double mastectomy, you can still develop cancer. Mm. And that's what you're insinuating yeah. when you said that. So tell us, is there a residual breast tissue that's left that you can't see?
So unfortunately, nobody can say they took away 100% every single cell.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
So when we do mastectomies, we're taking out that breast tissue. But like when we cut open, there's no like, oh, there's the line and we can see it clearly and take this mm-hmm. out versus leave that there. Mm-hmm. So that risk is never 0%.
Yeah.
It's not a guarantee. It's lower. It actually significantly drops your risk of breast cancer development lower than to the general population. So somewhere between 2-5%, maybe less than that. But it's just not zero.
Yeah. It's not like the clean margins and other surgical specialties where, you know, you can take and you see, there's mm-hmm. no more of it.
Right.
I wonder if this is going to turn into, a change in the guidelines. So currently, what are the guidelines for being screened with a mammogram for women?
That was my question. I have a very specific question
like
for you.
Like mine. Yeah.
Our current guidelines are to start screening mammogram at age 40. Unless there is a family history that would be determined by a healthcare provider that you need to start screening earlier. Typically what this is 10 years younger than the first degree relative, who like their age, as long as it doesn't occur after age 40. So like for instance, if your mother had breast cancer mm-hmm. at age 45, mm-hmm. you need to start screening mammograms at 35. As opposed to waiting until you're 40, which
that was my question.
Yeah.
My question was, it was specifically exactly about what you said. It's like, okay, we talk about young women. Okay, what is young women? What exactly is that number? I feel very young, but I was told not to tell my age. So we're not gonna talk about
it. Tell it, let it all out.
Listen, I've been 45 in June, honey. Let's work it out.
I love it.
But I have a mammogram coming up mm-hmm. and this story scared me mm-hmm. because even though there has not been cancer in my family, they've had cysts, they've had polyps, they've had other things in the breast tissue. And I was like, oh no, like is it gonna be a clear exam? So when you were just saying that okay, if your mother at this age, then going backwards at what age? I have a cousin that's dealing with breast cancer right now, she's 32. Mm. She's 32.
Yep.
So what do you just start as soon as you get breasts? Like, how does it, I mean, at this
yeah.
point,
no,
it's feel like
again,
that's,
what
it's very
saying.
Scary.
It's
scary.
Yeah, so screening like with mammogram does not start when you get breasts,
yeah.
but you should be breast aware,
yeah.
right? Because most of our young patients, because the screening recommendations don't start till 40, they're actually not waiting until a screening mammogram and finding a breast cancer. It's usually a lump or some kind mm-hmm. of physical exam finding mm-hmm. is why our young patients, we see them more so with those kind of symptoms. But being breast aware, so mm-hmm. doing self breast exams monthly, not every day, but self breast exams monthly, not to find something, but to know what your breast tissue feels like. So if you know what your breast tissue feels like, then you'll know when there's a difference. And if you question anything, like always go and get it checked out. That's what I always tell patients. Like, don't ever just assume, oh, it's a cyst. It's fine. It's nothing. I'm too young. I don't have a family history.
Right. Yeah. Always. And that's still going through. My hope is that, you know, people will listen to this, share this, and become more breast aware. I would love to normalize that in the common parlance.
Like, yes.
Really talking about, are you breast aware? You know, let's break past all of the stuff that comes with. Are you breast aware, right? Yeah. Do you know about your own breast?
I think that that's one of the great things about her story is that she has that platform and she put it out there, and many other celebrities or people in powerful positions that are able to do that, they put it out there to make everyone else aware. So when that story came out, I got so many messages about, how come I don't know about a risk calculator? Do I need it? What is this? Can you calculate this for me?
Yeah, just like that.
And I love that because a lot of people would not realize, you know, one of the big misconceptions is like, everyone thinks that a woman should only have whatever her mom's family history is. And it's like, actually, no, it's both sides. Mm-hmm. And so people just they're just not aware of it. So it's our job to educate. And it's our job to make everyone aware, to go to their healthcare team providers and ask questions and get those risk calculators.
And having that, having a conduit or a catalyst of a celebrity to help do that in those conversations just kind of pushes that message forward. That's just what you were saying earlier about Jamie. It's like everybody's waiting to hear what actually happened. Right. And then he probably could be helping so many other, you know, younger black men with whatever the case is, because we think stroke old, we think, you know, but it's like, no, I mean, you could be in your 40s, you could be in your 50s. Like, so that, you know, to that point of, like, why you're doing what you do, like, what happened, what's going on, because those people are so influential.
No, and you know, that's why we're having this conversation. Being breast aware, having these conversations with a medical professional who understands the ins and outs, because I'm sitting here like mind blown emoji, boom. Literally, I'm fully a cardiologist and had never heard of some of those things that you just said. And I'm so glad you were able to share that with us, Dr. Erin Bowman. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You guys know what I always say when we end. There's nothing more important than your health. Yep. Now go master it.